you once again for being our guest. It was a real pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. You've been listening to Between the Covers. Our guest today, Walida Imarisha, talking about Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Thank you so much for listening to KBOO. Tune in next Thursday on Between the Covers. We welcome Lydia Yuknovich here to talk about her new novel, The Small Backs of Children. Up next, Words and Pictures.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The community parade, Metamorphosis, will start at 10:45 a.m. There will also be artisan, craft, and community booths, sidewalk sales, live music, food, and more. Again, that's the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street going until 9 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I am joined today live in the studio by a local artist-writer team who have been collaborating on an epic comic series, a series which is now being released as a graphic novel by Image Comics. It's called The Autumnlands, Tooth and Claw. And my guests today are Benjamin Dewey and Kurt Busick. Ben and Kurt, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
I just want to thank both of you for staying home from the San Diego Comic-Con just to be on the show today. but yes, the book is coming out actually next week. It's called The Autumnlands, Tooth and Claw, and it's kind of a it's kind of a mashup of genres. It's dare I say it, funny animals. I mean, there's a lot of sword and sorcery and fantasy and mayhem and things like that. But there's still a lot of humor in there, so I'm going to call them funny animals. Tell us about The Autumnlands, Tooth and Claw. How you guys came together, Kurt? You're kind of a veteran writer. You've been writing since you were a teenager, working with comics artists across the spectrum, and you picked up this young whelp, Ben Dewey, and what drew you guys together?
Well, in the case of The Autumnlands, I knew for some years that I wanted to do this series. I wanted to do this epic fantasy dealing with animal people and this very rococo, highly textured magic setting. Mm-hmm. Once I was sort of on the way to doing it, I was looking around for artists who could do really expressive animal people. And I saw a couple of pinups that Ben had done for the Emerald City Con's charity book. And I thought, this guy, you know, I don't know whether he can do a storytelling, but But wow, can he draw animal people. And then I saw an 8-page story he'd done that was a Planet of the Apes backup story in an annual. And it was, hey, look at that. He can do landscapes. He can do drama. He can do, you know, the only thing that I thought was wrong with that story was I thought it was a little cramped. But that was the fault of trying to squeeze that much story into 8 pages, which was more on the writer than on him. So I tracked him down, which wasn't hard because he's a Periscope studio member. Yeah. And I described the series to him, and I didn't really get very far into the description before he said, I want to do this.
Yeah, it's funny because the week before I'd been looking at this collection that DC had put out called Wednesday Comics. It's this oversized volume, and it had a Commandy story by Ryan Sook in it.
Now tell us about Commandy, because Autumnland's Tooth and Claw has been called Conan meets Game of Thrones meets Commandy.
Well, Kurt is maybe a better authority on the history of comics, but Commandy is a Jack Kirby character,
yes,
who is the last boy in a world full of anthropomorphic animal people. And so when I came across this comic, and it's so well drawn, it's, you know, really interesting landscape, a lot of opportunity to do quite a bit with that world. And I thought, man, it'd be so awesome if I could draw Commandy. But nobody's ever going to let me do that. And so then 2 days later, I still have this thought bouncing around in my head. And Kurt calls me. He's like, this is Kurt Busick. And I'm like, oh, man, really? And he's like, do you want to draw a book that's like Commandy? I'm like, yeah, yes. You know, like, absolutely. Because Kurt was the first guy that I'd come across who made me, as an adult, get back into buying comics. And it was because he had written this Conan run that I didn't encounter anything else like it. It was so fun. From the first 2 or 3 pages, it's like, oh, this guy, whoever he is, this Kurt Busick, he really gets what Conan is supposed to be about. And so it was just a perfect confluence of things that worked out really well for me.
Yeah, the setting of this story is this magic world. And but there's also a lot of sly sort of political and social references in it. Magic is kind of a resource, a commodity in there, and you know, also there's a lot of, you definitely don't shy away from politics. There's some deep digs at bureaucracy and imperialism, trade and exploitation and class warfare.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of that is sly and how much of that is just dealing with the world the way it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the first issue came out, we had a lot of reactions from readers who say, "Oh, this is a, you know, this is about peak oil, isn't it? Because, you know, oil is a limited commodity."
Oh, so you have peak magic in Autumnland.
But the thing is, you know, that analogy falls apart the minute you say, "Well, clearly the solution to the oil crisis is bring back the guy who discovered oil in the first place and have him discover some more." That, it, you know, right. It's not an analogy that holds up. Mm-hmm. I was literally, I wanted the characters in the Autumnlands to have a reason to reach back through time and bring back a champion from the days before magic. And so it seemed to me a reasonable reason to do that, that magic is fading away. And so they need this guy back to fix things, and things don't go as they intend, and it sets off this whole big epic. And the idea, you know, the parallels between peak oil and our magical situation come from the fact that if I've got that situation, then I'm doing a story about scarcity, and it's going to echo that way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't intended as, oh, how can I say something about oil? Or even how can I say something about scarcity? It was, how can I get these characters I want to get on the stage in an interesting way? And then what are the repercussions of that?
Mm-hmm. It's rather cinematic. And I know that you've written for some comics that have been adapted into well, you've written for the Avengers, which,
yes,
of course. It's J.J. Abrams' world, by the way. We only live in it, you know. but yeah, this is, and we want to make sure that people know this is, it looks beautiful. The book looks beautiful.
Thank you. It's gorgeous.
But it's got it gets dark and violent and
that's
rather
true,
quickly.
Yeah.
I do want to do a shout out here. The design and the coloring
is
really fantastic. And these are some names I'm not too familiar with, but now I'm a fan. Jordi Belair colors and John Rochelle of Comic Craft on the design and lettering. Yeah, both really amazing.
Jordi Belair, I feel like, is like when John Mayall got Eric Clapton to play with him. Like, oh, well, this person is a superstar, monster talent. And when I showed her the pages and she wanted to color it, I just felt like everything was breaking right for me.
Yeah,
she's great.
Jordi's an Eisner-winning colorist, and she just does amazing work on everything she touches. And we were hugely lucky that she not only was available to do the Autumn Lands, but that she personally asked for it. She saw the pages and she said, "Let me color this. I want to color this. Can I color this? Tell me I can color this." And that's a testament to how nice the line art is that Ben was handing off. John Rochelle is an Eisner-winning letterer. We have to mock Ben every now and then because he's the only member of the team who doesn't have an Eisner yet.
But he's up for one tomorrow, and we will do a shout out for that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Let's first mention actually Periscope Studios, which Ben, you're a member of. And Kurt, you're too amazing to be part of Periscope Studios.
But they won't let me cross
the
river.
This is a cartoonist collective here in Portland.
Yeah.
Periscope Studio. It started small. It's quickly becoming one of the most celebrated repositories of comics talent anywhere, really. So Paul Tobin, who you've worked with, Ben, he's a member. He's your collaborator on the book I Was the Cat.
That's right. That's the one I'm nominated for.
That book's up for you. An Eisner Award at tomorrow's big ceremony at the San Diego Comic-Con, along with Kurt's Astro City. A couple of noms for that. Congratulations to both of you on the nominations.
Thank you.
let's give the listeners a quick rundown on who Will Eisner was, the fellow that this award is named after.
I'm going to defer to Kurt on this one. He will be articulate it much better than me.
Will is, in many ways, the history of American comics. That when the comic book form was starting, you know, Will was there as an earlier early writer artist packager. He's best known for a newspaper supplement he did called The Spirit, which was made into a not so great movie a while back.
It's very very noir. Yeah. It started back in the 40s, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's on the face of it. It's an action adventure detective story about a guy who solves crimes. But what it really is it's just a storytelling laboratory. It's a place where Eisner could tell people stories, tell mood stories. He did one story that was practically all about sound effects. And he was just using his 7 pages every week to experiment with the form of comics, where artists like Jack Kirby were all, you know, emotion and power and getting things out onto the page. Eisner was much more a formalist, trying to figure out.
Right. There's a cerebral quality to his visual experimentation that makes him a huge favorite of artists, even if they don't, if his aesthetic doesn't appeal to them entirely. It's there's so many innovative things that you can't help but pull something from him. He's so talented.
And everything he did, whether it was, you know, mood lighting or character acting or humorous dialect of its time. He was just, you know, he's the gold standard of ambitious, challenging craft in comics. So when the comics equivalent of the Academy Awards got named after him, it just seemed only fitting.
Yeah. And he had an amazing career. Will Eisner, I mean, he was born almost a century ago now, and he was really part of that whole golden age of comics, that a lot of which grew out of that New York kids of immigrant community, that sort of Eastern European, often Jewish sensibility, William Gaines, Siegel and Schuster, and
Simon and Kirby.
Yeah, and it was very anti-establishment. And you had the noir sensibility that came in from the movies into mm-hmm. the spirit and into comics, and he kept on becoming this amazing mentor, Will Eisner, which is one reason also why he really fostered a group of alternative underground people in the 60s and 70s and as time went on. But yeah, that's congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We want to let people know that you're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm SW Concer, and I'm live in the studio today with Kurt Busick and artist Benjamin Dewey. They're collaborating on a comic series which has now been collected in the graphic novel The Autumnlands, Tooth and Claw. And Kurt, I mentioned Astro City. This is a long running series that you have won multiple awards for. You've just like a multiple Harvey and Eisner Award winner. It's embarrassing it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And Alex Ross is a big name in comics these days. He does these incredible, just light emitting watercolor paintings, really. And he does a lot of your covers. You've worked with him. Astro City is this kind of, you've both done comics where you sort of take a meta view of the comics form. And what you do in Astro City is you have this environment, this community where superheroes and supervillains live side by side with ordinary people. And there's really this meta view of how that might work, how the individual actors on the stage might react to what's going on.
Yeah. In Astro City, the key starting point for it was that I've always been fascinated by the question, not merely the question "what if," which is what powers most adventure comics, but what else. that ever since I was a teenager, I was asking myself the question, what would it be like to see Spider-Man swing by in real life? What would it be like to be a lawyer in a superhero universe and have to argue that your client is innocent of murder because his evil twin did it?
and be right about that.
Yes. Or even questions like, I had teenage sisters and they had posters on their walls of hunky young stars mm-hmm. with no shirt on and their jeans unbuttoned. And I thought, well, in the Marvel Universe, what are the teenage girls? What posters do they have on their wall? They wouldn't have Captain America because he wouldn't do something like that. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have Spider-Man because he's a creepy outlaw.
Yeah.
So it would be the Human Torch, right? You know? And this is the sort of thing that I kind of obsessed about. And when I got a chance to do first Marvels and then Astro City, I was writing stories about what is it like to live in a world where that kind of thing happens, where giant metaphors for conflict and stress appear every day. That's sort of the literal engine of it. Beyond that, I found that I was telling stories that are really, I don't want to sound snooty about it, but stories of the human condition, that superheroes are big metaphors. Mm-hmm. So anytime you're telling a story about what it's like to deal with that sort of thing, you're really telling a story about what it's like to deal with whatever it's a metaphor for. Mm-hmm. I did one story that was all about Galactus coming to destroy the world. And to comic book fans, it was a story about, hey, here's a new view on the Galactus story. And when my mom read it, she said that was a really good Cuban Missile Crisis story.
Ah!
Because she didn't have that comics reference to say, I understand the continuity. She just said, everybody's facing the end of the world and they're powerless to do something about it, and all they can do is hope things change.
That's what I like about fantasy writing, or is what I like about fiction. And David Simon, who's one of my other favorite writers other than Kurt,
me and Dave.
You and Dave Simon. He said for years he did stories in Baltimore about crime and class clashing, and nobody paid attention. And then he wrote a five season series about that very thing, and then people suddenly cared. And so I think whether it's Blade Runner or Astro City or The Wire, you have a way to get people into a thing that they're not going to read if it feels like a chore. But if it feels like, it has some added value. They're going to embrace
it. It's the difference between describing something honestly and personalizing
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, what I love is in all your works, you don't hang a lantern on the in-jokes. I mean, you got inside jokes. I mean, Kurt, in Astro City, you name check a lot of comic creators. You have streets named after Alan Moore and Jack Kirby, you know, but that's in the background, you know. And in your book, The Autumn Lands, that you did together, I really enjoyed these sly references to familiar legislative committees, you know, among the magical elite. You've got, you know, Ways and Means and things like that. Yeah. But that's like nicely in the background.
That's actually what we call a hint.
Yeah.
It's a big honking hint about why this world is the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I do want to get back to the Autumn Lands because there's a lot of, you know, again, speaking about subtleties, tell me about these chapter headers. I've got the book right here. And there's something very Edgar Rice Burroughs about them. You drop out of this traditional comics form into what's, Paul Guinan and Anna Bennett, who we've had on the show many times, they did something similar with their Frank Reed book. They worked in that pulp magazine iconography that kind of harkens back to The Shadow and Conan and Weird Tales. So yeah, these chapter headers, people will notice they sort of take you out into that sort of Victorian Edwardian world.
Go ahead.
Part of the reason you see echoes of Edgar Rice Burroughs is our Eisner-winning letterer, John Rochelle, has based all the title lettering for at least the fantasy breaks, not the science fiction breaks.
Okay, like Tarzan and Conan style.
On 20s and 30s Burroughs titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But really, I mean, we were talking about Commandy earlier, and Autumn Lands is very strongly influenced by Commandy in that, you know, Ben was saying that he'd love to do something like Commandy, but he knew DC would never let him. I had a more direct example of that, which was I kept telling DC I wanted to do Commandy, and they kept not letting me. And finally, I realized, you know, if I did Commandy, it would be completely judged against comparison to, you know, Jack Kirby, the greatest American comics creator ever. You know, it's hard not to be found wanting in one way or the other. So what I really should do is I should take what I love about Commandy and go in a different direction with it. And that's why here we are doing Autumn Lands. And it's a series that's about magic rather than science fiction. It's a series that instead of being big and blocky and powerful, it's textured and rococo. You know, it's as much Jack Vance as it is Jack Kirby, which was a comparison. That was the comparison that really got me going. And that was before I discovered that Vance and Kirby were neighbors for years.
And we're careful about the details, too. For example, in Commandy, you have gorillas and tigers running around. And where our story takes place, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, it takes place in the Americas. And so if you have creatures who are not from the Americas, they're really rare. And it's not that I don't want to draw tigers. I love drawing tigers, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, we're going to have to get to
I want to go back to what Kurt said earlier, which is one of the reasons why he was really interested in working with you, Ben, is that your love of animal anatomy and your ability to, you know, to really respect the anatomy of animals while having them become these anthropomorphic characters is really fantastic. That's just top of the game stuff.
Thank you.
And another thing that you two seem to share is this absurdist humor. And it's sometimes dark. Ben, one of your side projects, and this is a book that's going to be coming out soon. It can be found online.
It's out already.
Tragedies series. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've seen in mini comics for a few years now. And it's just become a big, big hit around the circles.
Okay.
There's a couple. There's like Sheriff Puppy isn't being taken seriously, and it's really sad dachshund and with a badge and
an oversized cowboy hat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that I don't know if Kurt had seen that stuff. I think you had seen a little bit of Tragedy series.
Some of it.
I did it as a way to try and embrace what I'd seen another artist I really like, Eric Kennedy. He's this guy who he had done feature animation backgrounds for X-Men when he was really young. And later on, he was just sort of trying to get his chops back in comics because he had taken a break from what I gather. And he was doing these 90-minute sketches. And I thought, well, what can I do in 90 minutes that has all the things I care about, you know, in terms of joking around and good drawing, and try and squeeze that into one package where I don't take it overly seriously. And that's what I started doing, tragedy series, and put it up online. It just became the most popular thing I'd ever done. And at that same time, I was working on I Was the Cat, and then Kurt asked me to do Autumnland. So the last 2 years were pretty jam-packed in a way that was not always great. And for living the rest of my life, but it was creatively really rewarding.
A lot of late nights.
Yeah, 7 days a week.
Wow.
12 to 15 hours a day. So when you talk to people about becoming a comic book artist, and that's what they want to do, if you really want to be self-sufficient, it's getting harder and harder to do all the time. You have to make that kind of commitment at a certain point, and it can be emotionally, physically, mentally taxing to the point where you may spend a couple of years not feeling great, but if you come out the other side and you have a collaborator like Kurt who's willing to pull you from obscurity and make you...
I'm great that way.
Yeah, that's what I joked with him the other day. I was like, what does it feel like to be able to, you know, pull somebody out of obscurity and make their life better? And he's like, well, you know, great, I guess, you know, so it's been awesome.
It shows the work, the hours that you put into it totally shows in the Autumnlands, and you've gotten, great reviews. I Was the Cat, people especially pointed out the artwork as being totally worthwhile. And one thing about your artwork that is really, I feel is really important, is that the gags, you put in humor in the art, you know, little, just funny moments. You can see like the anticipation of something to come, or the recoil from something that just happened, and it can make you laugh. It's that, again, it's that absurdist humor. I get the feeling that with both of you, the ideal reaction from readers would be them saying, oh, that's terrible, while they're unable to stop laughing.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like just the scripts that I'll get from Kurt, I feel like a fan because I will read a script and then I get really excited to draw it because there's full of these moments that I know I'm going to have either a challenge to overcome and get better in the process, or I'm really going to be able to showcase all of my sweet karate moves, you know, like on the page.
Your kung fu, yes.
And he does that for me all the time. Like, you know, there's a lot that he puts in there, and we do a lot of back and forth. And when I finish thumbnails, that the intermediate process between the script and
the
finished art,
right? Yeah.
I will send those back to him, and I feel like it's a golden opportunity because I don't know anybody who knows more about comics and who has written more comics that I like than this guy to my right. You walked into a comic shop with him once, and people were coming up to him like, oh, well, you worked on this and you worked on that. And he's like, every other book, it seemed like, on the shelf was something he had worked on. So it's
because I'm old.
Well, you have, like, I get the advantage of all the things you've learned in your time working in comics. And he said, you know, if you have something that you disagree with me on, then please let me know. So, I will, if we ever come to one of those things.
What I really want, I mean, I want people to laugh when something is funny, you know, even in the midst of darkness and shadows and so forth. But what I want most, more than anything, is I want people to care. I want them to care about the characters and about what happens to them. I don't want to engage in spectacle for the sake of spectacle. Mm-hmm. I want to make you worried for the characters, happy for the characters, to feel like you're engaged along with them. And, you know, on the one hand, it was then perhaps dumb of me to create a concept that was about animal people who do not have as expressive faces as human beings. But Ben is just amazing at...
he does postures, which is really important.
Postures and lighting. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll figure out what angle do you need to have a warthog's face at. So that the shadows across the details of the face will make them appear sad.
Yeah, that's the trickiest part of it. Yeah.
Or sarcastic, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, it's easy for me to say, yeah, let's get a sarcastic warthog expression here. And then Ben has to actually do it, and he can.
Thank you.
Well, this is a the stakes are really high in this story, and they get high very fast. This is the Autumnlands Volume 1. So assuming this is the first six issues yeah. of the comic, assuming that you're going to keep going and building the yeah. story as time goes on. It seems like Image is keeping you on, saying go forward.
Oh yeah,
yep.
I'm excited because this story I feel like is as high as the stakes are, as intricate as some of the building is at this point. It's really a springboard to really fun, even grander things that we've been talking about since the origin of the series that we knew we'd get to. Mm-hmm. But you need that entry point. And I think we've gotten a nice solid foundation from which we can go.
Yeah, this feels like grand stakes in the first volume. Once we get toward the end of the series, this will feel like a pebble in the water.
Oh my, so we're talking like Breaking Bad levels of building. Oh,
I kind of feel like it. I feel like I feel like I'm on the ground floor of something pretty extraordinary, and I'm lucky that I get to be a person making it.
And you know, there's a reason why in the original descriptions we described it as Conan meets Commandy meets Game of Thrones, because it's big and sprawling, mm-hmm. and there's a lot more going on than you can tell at the beginning. But things that feel like throwaway comments yeah. at the beginning mean a whole lot.
Pay yeah. close attention. There may be some red weddings. Well, the book is The Autumnlands, Tooth and Claw, mm-hmm. Volume 1. The writer is Kurt Busiek. The artist is Benjamin Dewey. Kurt and Ben, thanks for joining us today on Words and Pictures.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Yeah, thanks very much.
So how can people find out more about your various projects and collaborations?
I have the webcomic, the Tragedy Series, is on Tumblr, but if you just type in Benjamin Dewey Tragedy Series to your Google, you'll be able to find it. And Autumnlands is at every comic book shop. It's, I think, about $10, and it's 180 yep. pages. It's a pretty sweet deal, I think.
Yeah, yeah. For our first volume, we priced it at $9.99 simply because I'm a firm believer in the way you get people hooked on comics is you put them in front of them, you know, make yeah. them cheap, make it easy to say, I'll give this a try, and then you just get yeah. the hooks in. In my case, I have a website, www.busiek.com, that is sadly out of date because I've been too busy writing yeah. to update it, but it has a reasonably good bibliography of my work and a scattering of blog entries of possible interest, things like that. Yeah.
Well, once again, best of luck at the Eisner Awards. We'll hope to have you back soon.
Yeah, thanks very much.
I hope so.
And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. I'm your host, SW Concer. You can find an archived version of the show later today at KBOO.FM/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
This KBOO program.